welcome to another episode of Inside the Helmet here at OpenPaddock.net. This time we're joined by Lisa Noble, Chairman of the Board for the Sports Car Club of America starting in 2013. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Doug. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, I recently joined the SCCA and been having a ball, an absolute blast. And one of my fellow members there at the Kansas City region was telling me about a little bit about how you got into motorsports, although I would really like to hear it from you. How did you get involved in this crazy business?
Well, I got to tell you, I love to tell my story, so sit back and listen if you don't mind, because it's a pretty good yarn. When I was 14 years old, I was dating a fellow who had a driver's license, so big stuff. Mm-hmm. And we decided one weekend to he had an affiliation with the club. So we decided one weekend to run up to a race at a place called Lake Garnett, Kansas, where they had for many years one of the premier races of the United States, Lake Garnett Grand Prix. And what they did is they took a public park. I can't think of one particularly in Kansas City. Pick any park in your town there in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. And imagine closing off the roads, putting up hay bales and a few water barrels and calling it a racetrack.
Paved?
Lake Garnett Stadium.
Paved or dirt?
Paved.
Okay.
Absolutely paved. They used park roads. They used single lane bridges with concrete abutments. It's just crazy. I should send you a couple of pictures to give you the flavor. Anyway, so the Stowell and I went to the race, and very literally, I can tell you, because it's burned in my mind, I walked through the gate, I stopped, and said out loud, "This is what I want to do the rest of my life." And here I am, 42 years later. I feel like the luckiest woman around.
You know, it's funny. We, especially being IndyCar fans, we're as a breed very nostalgic for the old days of racing. But you know, when we really look back at some of those old days, it was pretty sketchy. Some pretty shady things going on. So where did you go from there? So you knew you wanted to do this, that this is something that you wanted to be involved in for the rest of your life. You'd found a passion. What was your next step? How did you feed that passion?
There were a few different things that I did. I went to member meetings back in those days. It was a pretty big social event. It was more of a party than it was a business meeting. Mm-hmm. And met a lot of people in the club. I started going to races and to solo events, but more to races in the area. We raced at Wichita, which is my hometown, at another city park racetrack, a constructed racetrack for a single weekend, and that was the Lake Afton Grand Prix. Down in Ponca City, Oklahoma, same thing, a public park turned into a racetrack for one weekend of the year. Ponca City Grand Prix, we raced at the Hutchinson Aerodrome out of Yoder, Kansas. The old St. Louis racetrack. There were a few racetracks around that I was able to save my nickels and dimes and usually have enough gas money to get there. And I worked. By the time I was 16, I had three Chiefs licenses in timing and scoring, which is where I started, registration, and then what became my passion was pits and grid. I really loved the action down in the hot pits and having close interaction with the drivers, being able to touch the cars, meet the drivers, shake their hands, talk, get to know them out on the grid as they got ready to go out for their sessions. So that was the next step.
And you know, I tell you what, if no one's if for people who haven't been on the grid right before the start of a race, it is a magical and energizing type of experience. The buzz, the excitement, the energy that surrounds the energetic tension, I guess, is what I feel, and I presume that's kind of what got you hooked at being down on the grid. Is that right?
It is a thrill, and being and having charge of that as the head of the grid was incredibly empowering for a young woman and incredibly educational for me. Sense of responsibility. I can't really tell you all of the wonderful things that I've learned through the club, such as that. But at the 5-minute warning, the head of the grid is responsible to see that everybody's in their proper place, that cars are running, or those that aren't are have watchful eyes, and there are, the rules of the grid are followed, and the 1-minute warning to be sure that those cars are all running, the grid is cleared and safe, and having the responsibility to send those cars out on the racetrack, doing safety checks in between on the cars to be sure that all my drivers, because after a while, there's a sense of community and a sense of camaraderie that I like to think about and talk about in the club, and we do all have a sense of shared responsibility for one another to be sure that whatever oversight that we can use to make the experience better that we use. So, safety checks on the grid, and then having those cars in those days, I don't know, 30, 40 car fields had passed you going out to the racetrack. It was a lot of fun. It truly was.
Well, let me ask you a pair of questions, pair of related questions. As head of the grid, certainly there had to been a lot of a lot of different situations that you saw. What was one of the most memorable? And maybe share one that was a memorable event or situation for a positive reason, and perhaps one of the sketchiest, I guess, if you were. 'Cause I'm sure there's probably some iffy things that happened. Their reports over the races.
Sure. Just a couple, three easy things. Getting a car push started before the 1-minute warning. You do whatever you can to get a car on the grid. So somebody's down there, and at the 2-minute warning, they realize their car won't start. So getting the right cadre of people to give that a push start. And I remember tumbling head over heels. That's
Not
not
exactly
exactly
what I
getting
wanted
them
to
to tell you. Tumbling head over heels. Push starting a car, getting my foot run over, all those kinds of things, and just walking out of the day with a big old smile. I made a mistake once. Lake Afton Grand Prix, and we raced A Sports Racers back in those days. Very cool cars. Think old Can-Am cars if you're familiar with them.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Fred Parkhill from Oklahoma City had a beautiful car, and I believe Jack Hinkle from Wichita, Larry Johnson from Colorado. We probably had four or five A Sports Racers on the grid. It was just phenomenal. But at the 1-minute warning, I saw Larry's or I saw Parkhill's crew behind his car, and they were going to push the car, which is not legal or acceptable past the 1-minute warning. This is what I believed was happening. So I stepped in front of the car, and they just went crazy. Here the grid is leaving, and they've lost their grid spot, and here is this crazy woman standing in front of them that won't let them go. And so I stepped out of the way. They pushed the car, and they luckily Fred luckily Fred was astute enough to move back into his spot. But I protested them. Push start after the 1-minute warning. Well, luckily, the officials and Fred and the crew all came over. I suppose I was 16 or 17 years old. Pretty intimidating for a kid like that. And they did explain to me that the car was running, but they had lost their first gear, so they were pushing it so Fred could get it into some gear that he could start the race in. So I did make a mistake that one time, but I'll admit to. But I do, and there was a very memorable situation. We decided at Ponca City 1 year that we wanted to have a standing start, a Le Mans type start, with our small production cars, IT cars, think IT cars if you know what those are, improved touring small production, small displacement cars. And so the Le Mans start just brought in a huge field of cars, 60
Now,
cars.
let me stop you there and get some clarification. When you say Le Mans start, are you meaning like old school, you're outside of the car and you run to your car and buckle in and go, or
Oh yeah.
standing start as you're just parked on the grid?
Oh no, we had the cars on one side. We had the drivers and one official for every driver on the other side of the track.
Nice.
The starter on the starter stand shot a pistol, and the drivers took off. And as they took off, that was the start of the race.
Mm-hmm.
So, and trying to do this in some kind of a safe and fair manner, it was just a riot because, you know, some guys aren't exactly in the best shape in the world, and there's windows to be climbed through, and anyway, every driver had to have the okay for their official in order to leave their grid spot on the opposite side of the racetrack. So that was probably one of the funnest experiences that I ever had on the grid.
Well, you didn't stay on the grid and in the officiating role. You eventually got behind the wheel. What made you decide that, one, you could do it, two, what made you pull the trigger to give it a shot? Because those two things don't always happen together. Thinking that you can, and then making the decision that you will. How did both of those come about for you?
Well, I never had the ambition to be a race car driver. In 1979, I married Bill Noble, who was the larger at the time, and clear up into 2005. And when he quit working, I took the business over. And even today, we're the largest builder of Formula V race engines in the United States. Bill was a very competitive fellow in Formula V. Formula V was a big class. So I watched for a little while. He offered his second place car. He finished second in the national championships. He offered it to me before we were married to go to a driver's school. And went down to Dallas. There was an airport course there at Greater Southwest was the name of it. And I ran this driver's school in a national championship caliber car. I was the only car there with rain tires, and I lost the field. I thought I was a young Mario, man. I thought, well, what the hell are these guys talking about? This is no problem. I got this. So Bill didn't quite know how to handle that, but anyway, I went on and did some for early drivers. I'll back up one sec. I was lucky enough at that driver's school to have one of the very small handfuls, and I'm talking 2, 3, 4, maybe 5, of women drivers in the Sports Car Club of America at the time, national caliber drivers. Her name was Fran Klim, and I was lucky enough to have her for an instructor. I think it's very important that people have a picture of possibility in their head. So that was the first time that I had ever seen a woman in a race car. And so that gave me some confidence that this might be a possibility for me. So I think it's important as we go through our racing lives and our clubs and what we do, how we promote, that we give different kinds of people, different ethnicities and genders and walks of life, the opportunities to see themselves participating in whatever kind of racing it is that we're able to promote. So,
that's good.
That's a good soapbox to stand on.
So, are you still behind the wheel?
So. Absolutely. So, short part of a first part of a two part story. I raced for a couple of years. I wasn't very good. I was terrible. I was young, dumb, thought I was invincible. I had no racecraft skills. Had a baby. Came back first race after the baby, and raced at the Lake Ponca Grand Prix hit a tree backwards at about 120 miles an hour and broke up my left side pretty bad, which caused me to sit out for 10 years. So that's the first part of the racing story.
And was that setting out because you said, that's it, I'm done, I'm not doing this anymore, or?
No, that was really never my intention, but I had a small child, and we were you know, our businesses, we had a couple, three business endeavors, and those were growing. I'll be honest, it just never occurred to me. It just wasn't a priority for me. So my daughter's 10 years old. We're at the junior high school, at the grade school, and she's playing ball. Somebody walks up and says to Bill, and this is very funny because Bill never let or allowed me to do anything in my life. We were very independent people. This fellow said, when are you going to let Lisa get back in the race car? And he looked at me and said, whenever she wants to. I was in a driver's school 2 weeks later at Summit Point, West Virginia, and have not stopped
nice.
Since.
Well, when you came back, was there a difference in your racecraft and how you treated the car, how you treated the race and your fellow racers around you? Was there a difference between how you did that before the accident and then after your 10-year hiatus?
So that's a killer question, man. Absolutely. I spent those 10 years as a crew chief for a very large Formula car team for the Noble Racing team, 3 to 6 car team all over the United States, 10 to 18 weekends a year. I learned racecraft by watching and listening. What I really learned is that it was such a thing as racecraft. So I knew it was there. It took me, I will say it took me 5 years to develop a level of skill that I was satisfied with. And it took me 5 years to become competitive. I won my first race, first national race 5 years after that. I was the first woman to ever win a national race in Formula V, which is the largest Formula car class in road racing. And it didn't stop there by any stretch. I still learn today. I hired a coach, Jim Carney, at the runoffs this last year. I think that coaching helps hone those skills and helps give a driver focus. So I'm still learning every session that I'm on the racetrack.
Well, how often do you get back to any driver schools, or do you?
About 8 years ago, 9 years ago, I did some work for the club in helping them, for the SCCA, in helping them develop their driver's school program. And they sent me around the United States to several schools. In 1 year, I ran 10 driver's schools. That didn't hurt my racecraft either. Some I ran, some I observed, some I... I ran or observed, and we also accredited certain schools, and so I had the opportunity to go to some pro schools as well as club schools. That bit of time, and I'm thinking actually it was probably about 10 years ago, but that gave me a knowledge base to become an instructor. That's one of the things that I truly love to do in the club, is to instruct new drivers, old drivers, and to be able to give input back to them as well.
You know, it's one of the things as a teacher myself, I always think one of the best ways to really learn something is to try to teach it yourself. And no matter how good you think you are, you can always learn. I always use the example that, you know, even Tiger Woods as a golf coach. And so it's really inspiring to, with all the success that you've had in Formula V, hear that you're still seeking out a driver coach to improve. Because the improvement really never stops, right?
The improvement never stops. There's always something to learn. There's bits of strategy. There's Car setups change, so there's the technical and mechanical parts that that as a driver it's not always easy to focus on. So it's always good to have another set of eyes there. And racetracks change, and even if they don't, there are things that different points of view that can in my experience always help, always give you different ideas, different things to try. And with data, those all that can be backed up.
So for someone who's interested in wanting to start racing, they've got the bug for motorsports, but not sure how to get into it, how to get started, what would your advice to them be?
Go to a race, walk up to registration, whatever, find a racetrack near you. Let me back off of that a minute. Go over to SCCA.com. There's a page that'll pop up for you that says, "What can I do with my car?" It's an easy three menu, three drop down menu. So you pick out your car make, you pick out the model, and you pick out the year, and that will tell you what you can do with your car in the SCCA. Can you go to a time trial? Can you go to a production, a PDX, which is one of our events where you can take a street car out on a racetrack with instruction, kind of help you learn the potential of your street car and with a coach beside you in a non-competitive environment? Can you autocross your car? Can you rally cross your car? Can you take your car on a road rally? The answer for road rally almost always is yes. So that is a very easy first step that is anybody can do it. You know, it doesn't take any commitment at all, and it might just spark your interest. If you'd like to go to a race, show up, stop at the registration building at whatever your local racetrack is, and tell them, "Hey, I Lisa Noble told me to come over here and take a look around. Is there somebody that can help me understand what's going on? Show me what's going on around here today." And somebody will. Any of those kinds of things, if you don't have a racetrack close, a solo event, same thing, walk up to the registration. It's pretty evident where it's at. It's almost always at the gate. Tell them that you're new, and our people are very welcoming. We would love to have any of your readers or listeners show up at our events and just take a look. We see that our people enjoy talking about what they do at the track, the different specialties, and they love to have the opportunity.
Well, Lisa, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate you sharing your story, and hopefully it inspires more people to get involved in the SCCA. I know I really enjoyed my time, my short amount of time in the club so far. So again, thank you for joining us.
Certainly, Doug, and thank you for being a member of. We appreciate your participation, sir.